Hi, welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. This is our first episode. I'm Editor-in-Chief Jordan Raup.
And I am Staff Writer Dan Mecca. Today, we're going to be talking about I Love You Man, a review of I Love You Man, and a review of Killshot, which just came out on DVD. But before that, we're going to talk about a couple old movies that we've just caught up on recently, and a couple bits of movie news that we find very interesting. Take it away, Jordan.
So yesterday, DreamWorks announced a July 4th, 2011 release date for Transformers 3. And then today, Michael Bay followed up and said DreamWorks was wrong. Here's an exact quote from his website. "I said I was taking a year off from Transformers. Paramount made a mistake in dating Transformers 3. They asked me on the phone. I said yes to July 4th, but for 2012. Whoops, not 2011. That would mean I would have to start prep in September. No way. My brain needs a break from fighting robots." So, Dan.
Wait. I just want to go back to the end of that quote there. "My brain needs a break from fighting robots." So, we're talking about Transformers, right? I just want to make sure.
Well, Dan, what's your opinion of the Transformer films? Well, the first
one. The second one hasn't come out yet.
Well, I mean, we can talk about the trailer.
Yes, we can. Of course we can. Let me just give you a quick 2 cents review of just all the way up until Transformers 2 trailer. I enjoyed Transformers, the first movie. I thought it was about 30-40 minutes too long. I loved the last 45 minutes. There were some great action sequences. Blew me away totally. And I feel like it was the movie Michael Bay was born to direct. I think no one can dispute that. That being said, I did not really like the Transformers 2 teaser or the trailer. Or I guess really it's just a teaser trailer. It's pretty much all we've gotten so far. And I prefer, just to get this out there, the Terminator Salvation trailer far more than the Transformers 2 trailer.
All right, Dan.
You disagree?
I have to disagree with you.
What the fuck?
All right. Well, when the...
Hang on.
Yes.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. I forgot to do that.
Yes,
a cheers to any group. This is a cheers to any green beer that you're drinking right now. Obviously, you're going to be listening to this after St. Patrick's Day. But since we're recording it on St. Patrick's Day, I figured it was a happy celebration. I feel like we wanted to share that with all who's listening.
And you're Irish, so.
And I am Irish, so. Anyway,
so back to the porn.
Back to your fucking opinion on Transformers. Go ahead.
All right. Well, first, I thought I saw the first Transformers midnight showing.
Yes.
With a friend.
Did you really?
Yeah, of course.
That's sad.
That's before I knew you.
Yes, it was.
the first Transformers midnight showing with a friend that loves those kind of movies, and so I got out and I was like, wow, that was great, and then I saw it again, and that's when the story kind of fell apart for me, but I still stand by that it's the best summer action movie to come out in a long time.
That was a bold statement. That's all I'm gonna say about that. But it's a great
in terms of mindless.
It is a great action movie. Now let's just get back to this. So I'll give Michael Bay the benefit of the doubt, and obviously the man in his own right is really good at what he does. Which is make 2-hour commercials. which are they're great commercials. So, but they're great. Technically, really, he's very good. So. I guess I understand him being tired. I can understand that. But did anyone really want a Transformers 3 by 2011? I mean, are we really that desperate of summer blockbusters?
Do you think the hype for Transformers 2 is in full swing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. I will say here now, I really do think Transformers 2 will deliver. Like I said, I feel like Michael Bay has been waiting to make these movies his whole life. I feel like
I have to agree.
There's really nothing he can do wrong at this point. I mean, Transformers hit on all cylinders. For Christ's sake, it's 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's ridiculous when you think about what it's about. You know what I mean? Really. Yeah. And I mean, Shia LaBeouf, let's not lie. I'm not gonna pussyfoot around it. I like him. I like the guy. I think he's got a really a presence, I think kind of a movie star quality that a lot of people don't have nowadays just because movie stars are less common now than they have been. So... Yeah. I feel like he kind of brings something to the table that's rare.
Yeah.
Even in Eagle Eye, which was a piece of shit. I don't think that's really disputable.
Right.
He carried it to an extent.
Yeah, he was a joy to watch. And when he was Spielberg backing him.
Yeah, and he's got Spielberg pretty much just, picking shit. That's hearsay, obviously. But, Spielberg pretty much just backing him in every way. he can do no wrong. And so Transformers 2 will probably be fun. But I mean, 2012, I can wait.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when the first release date got announced, I thought it was kind of soon. I mean, but it keeps with the tradition of a Transformers movie every 2 years.
So it's going to be like the Saw franchise?
Oh, man.
Nothing like the Saw franchise, let me tell you.
Too bad Transformers cost over $100 million and not $5
million. True, amen to that.
But
actually, for all those who don't know this, I think it's probably obvious, but just in case you're wondering, there is no, and you can check this on Box Office Mojo, because that's where I'm getting my information, but no Saw movie out of the five that have come out have, no Saw movie has cost more than $12 million, and all of them have grossed at least 50. Think about that. I just want everyone out there listening to think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy.
That's it.
It's crazy. All right. So, moving on. Next piece of news, another summer blockbuster, comes from Sam Raimi. Sam recently spoke to MTV and talked briefly about Spider-Man 4. So, Raimi first confirmed that they're not going to do back-to-back movies like some news outlets reported. He said they're just doing one film. Raimi also commented on the villains. He said, all the characters or villain or villains, whatever we decide to do, will be from Stan Lee's creations or those that came after him. So, I'm kind of glad that Raimi is just doing one film. I think he needs to get his footing back after Spider-Man 3. I that was just a laughable excuse for a comic movie. And probably one of the biggest, the biggest jumps in quality from a sequel to a third film. So I have to say that I'm glad that he's just focusing on the one film, and I'm interested to see how many villains or if it's just one villain he's going to focus
hopefully
on.
Hopefully less than 15.
Yeah, that's all I'm hoping for.
Because that's what it felt like in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Now, Dan, I mean, since we talked about the Transformers franchise, what do you think about Spider-Man?
Okay, well, I'm going to say right out, I like Spider-Man 1. I thought it was a nice movie, you know, kind of the definition of a comic book movie. Yeah, very enjoyable. And Spider-Man 2 is an improvement upon that, in many ways. Yeah. In general, a better movie. And, you know, I don't think Spider-Man 3 was good.
No.
I just think it comes down to, you know, either jumping the shark, nuking the fridge, phrase you want to use.
So Spider-Man franchise. The second one, I loved every part of it. I think it was one of the best, you know, popcorn action flicks there is. I mean, not comic book movies. I mean, I think Dark Knight kind of takes the cake for,
definitely
realistic tone and everything. But in just terms of
pure... But it's a pure comic book
movie. Yeah, pure comic movie. It's just, you know, fun for... Yeah.
No, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, Spider-Man 2, I would argue that Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 are closer than people say. I do like Spider-Man almost as much as Spider-Man 2. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of put Spider-Man 2 on this abnormal pedestal, mm-hmm. which I never really understood. I mean, I get it. It's, I guess, tighter. It's more, not even condensed. It kind of just excels upon everything that the first Spider-Man did. In a lot of ways that the Dark Knight excelled on a lot of what Batman Begins did, actually. But, you know, Spider-Man 3 was kind of like jumping the shark, like I was saying, you know, and just trying to do too much. Watching that movie, I mean, I honestly felt like Sam Raimi was kind of just having fun,
the emo dance sequence.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Honestly, watching that, you think to yourself, I mean, this is a guy who has made some of the best B-movies ever.
Yeah.
You know, Evil Dead and movies from the 80s, like Crime Wave even, which is this just total no-budget mafia film with Bruce Campbell that's ridiculous, right? But, I mean, it's good because it knows it's ridiculous, and it takes its low budget and really just makes the most out of it. And here you got him. He has, you know, what, $170 million or something crazy like that? I don't even know what the budget was on that, but... But it looks worse in a lot of respects to those Evil Dead movies, than those Evil Dead movies, because it just seems like there's no heart in it. Yeah. And, you know, and I feel like with Spider-Man 4, I have no problem with them making another one.
I mean, he's getting a break between the films with Drag Me to Hell.
Exactly. So. Yeah, right, right. Which,
are you excited for that?
I'm not. Really? Just personally, I don't. That's not really my forte.
Yeah.
That being said, I've been getting a lot more into horror films just because I'm trying, you know, obviously seeing as much as I can. I really kind of love The Strangers. I mean, I love Halloween. I saw that a long time ago, obviously, but that's a great movie. You know, there's good and bad to it. High Tension, I've heard a lot of good things about. I haven't seen all of it, but
The Descent,
I hated, actually. Yeah.
I think we watched that together.
I hated it.
I think we are the two people.
I think we're the only two people in the world. Yeah. I think we're the only two people in the world that hated it, and this might descend our podcast listeners to zero. I don't want to lie to you guys that are not listening, I guess, anymore, but
I heard there's a different cut of the movies, American and then European.
Why? But we saw the European cut.
We saw, spoilers ahead, we saw the cut where it ends pretty bleak.
Yeah, it ends bleak. Just a spoiler. Yeah, this is a spoiler if you haven't seen it. Well, you don't need to see it anyway. But,
the girl in the movie,
she gets out. She like escapes from the cave.
Yeah.
It's all about spelunking and stuff like that, like cave diving and everything. And she gets out of the cave, but then in the bleak version, the European version, which we saw, it's all a dream.
Yeah.
And she's still in the cave.
Right.
And you like hear the monsters coming to get her.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And I heard the American one just cuts a little before that, and it just ends with her getting out of the cave.
Yeah, like there's no dream.
Yeah.
Like she got out. That's the implication.
Yeah, so all right, well, I think that wraps up some movie news, and next is a discussion on some older films we've been watching.
Okay, so old movies that we have been catching up on. Me and Jordan have seen a lot of movies. I'm not gonna shy away from that fact. We take pride in it, but obviously we haven't seen everything, of course. So we try to catch up on movies that we haven't seen. Backstory on a movie that I recently just saw, Bridget Jones's Diary.
I'm in the process of viewing it.
Of course,
it's been.
Jordy, are you halfway done? You're halfway done with it?
Yeah, about halfway.
Yeah, I watched it last week. Me and Jordan, in case you're not followers of the website daily or something like that, we recently went on a road trip, a week-long thing, down the East Coast, and we stopped at a lot of places. And in the process, we actually visited Jordan's girlfriend, who also goes to the University of Buffalo. That's where we go to school. But she was vacationing down in Orlando. She bought Bridget Jones's Diary last week. So it was a lazy day at the beach, and so I just watched Bridget Jones's Diary. You know, I watched it. I had never seen it before. I'd seen the second one, The Edge of Reason, on a plane. And, you know, as everyone knows, watching a film on a plane is never really a good experience. Even if it's a good film, I would argue it's really never a fun thing. Planes aren't a comfortable place to watch a film. But in this case, it was even worse because Bridget Jones 2 was horrible. It was just a terrible movie. Just there was nothing about it that I felt was very good, whatever. So I really never had an inclination to watch the first one. But anyway, the opportunity was there. I saw it. I took it. I watched the movie. And I have to say, I've heard a lot of things about this movie. A lot of people love this movie. It's a Harvey Weinstein, Miramax movie. She got nominated for it. Did it get nominated for Best Picture?
It was nominated for one Oscar.
Okay, so it was just her then.
All right. It was nominated for Best Actress in a Leading Role.
Okay.
2002.
So Academy no. Awards. Yeah, so okay, that it got one Oscar. Okay.
Yeah, she lost to Halle Berry actually for Monsters Ball.
Oh, wow, that's. Who else? Do you know who else got nominated? Do you remember?
Yeah, Judi Dench got nominated for Iris, Sissy Spacek.
Oh, she should have won.
In the Bedroom, and Nicole Kidman for Moulin Rouge.
Oh, she. All right. Well. Oof. I would argue. I would think Sissy.
Halle Berry is good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Sissy Spacek or Nicole Kidman on that one.
Yeah.
Probably Sissy Spacek. I mean, have you seen In the Bedroom? That is a movie.
I have not seen it.
Little Children's good.
Yeah.
In the Bedroom is great.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sorry. So Bridget Jones, I liked it. I didn't love it. you know, I, like I said, I feel like the buildup for this film, I mean, it came out a while ago, 2002? Or 2001, right? Because it was the O2 Oscars.
Directed by Sharon Maguire.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was good. I love Hugh Grant. I love Colin Firth. Hugh Grant was in About a Boy, which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Love it.
And Colin Firth was recently in, actually, Then She Found Me, which is, I feel like, an incredibly underrated movie that Helen Hunt wrote and directed. Did you see that,
John? I watched the first 5 minutes with my mom. And then I switched it.
It's great. No, it's a great movie. Bad. No, it's a great movie. I mean, it's really, I don't know, kind of natural, like really just kind of a natural movie. But yeah, no, I mean, I like those two guys. I really don't like Renee Zellweger. I mean, it's a personal thing. Yeah. I just don't, there's something about her that rubs me the wrong way. I read Cold Mountain and then I saw it. That could be one of the reasons, and I hated her in it. That could be one of the reasons why
Did you like her in Appaloosa?
Actually, you know what? That's funny. I did kind of like her in that.
Yeah.
She was okay. I mean, Viggo Mortensen
was just
money in that movie. Like, there's no. And Jeremy Irons was even. I mean, his accent was rough, but.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's just. I mean, those are two actors who are great. I mean, Ed Harris. I don't know about his directing. He directed that.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know about Appaloosa. We're talking about Appaloosa in case we're kind of going all over the place. But I mean, this is relevant. Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you feel?
No, I like the movie.
It was his second directing movie.
I would say that's a movie where the script did more for me than the script.
I mean, he tried to do a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of.
I feel like compared to, let's say, like another Western that recently came out, The Proposition.
Mm.
Compared to that movie, like those shots, like you don't forget that. Like
no.
No. Yeah.
But and I mean, that guy, John Hillcoat,
yeah,
he is directing The Road.
Oh, man.
Which,
it had some bad early buzz, I heard. But I heard.
The Road?
Yeah, The Road, but then.
Well, it could be because of the release date getting moved.
But then I saw some new, recently edited footage.
I mean, if you haven't read this book, Cormac McCarthy wrote it, who wrote No Country for Old Men and All the Pretty Horses.
Blood Meridian,
which is considered by many to be the most violent Western novel ever written. They've been trying to make that into a movie actually for a while. I don't know where that's standing right now. Ridley Scott had been rumored, but he's rumored for 14 things. So
Monopoly
movie. Hello. no, but I mean this movie. Yeah. I mean, well, it was a lot more traditional. The Proposition was like really kind of edgy and raw. Yeah. Appaloosa played more like somewhere in between The Searchers and Unforgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Not like traditional.
Yeah.
You know, not like
a mix.
You know, they died with their boots on or something where it's like a long time ago and it's like just the wild
love
west.
Triangle X aspect in it. I really didn't. I didn't see that. I mean, like, I knew before I saw it. I read a little bit. But, I mean, it played much more prominent.
It was, you know, it was, I mean, it was kind of fun. I don't want to give away too many spoilers. But, I mean.
Yeah.
The best part about that movie is that it seems like the characters are real because everyone makes mistakes. You know, you know what I mean?
There wasn't a hero, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no one's a good guy. Yeah. No one's a hero, like you said. You know, it's just kind of like
Wayne.
Everyone, yeah. So that was the best part of it. I mean, it was I kind of need to watch it again, that movie. But,
all right, back to Bridget Jones.
Bridget Jones. I'll pretty much end with, it seems overrated to me. She was good in it. I thought it was a funny movie. It was well written. I liked it. I will say that. I liked it. But, there's a fight scene in the middle between Hugh Grant and Colin Firth, which is ridiculous.
I haven't got to that. I think I'm up right up there.
Yeah. It's funny, but it doesn't have a place in the movie. So it kind of takes you out of the movie. Yeah. And then it's like, I feel like the character of Bridget Jones, and I haven't read the books.
Yeah.
But the character of Bridget Jones is one of these characters where I get what the author's trying to do, or even the screenwriter, if they change things. I don't really know how faithful of an adaptation it is, but.
Well, the Helen Fielding, she did both.
She wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So I'm assuming that, I mean, faithful in the sense that it was the same mind.
Yeah.
She could have changed things, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, I feel like the Bridget Jones character, at one sense, it's trying to, comfort women in the sense that, you know, Bridget Jones is like you too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is the life they leave with these men who are misogynistic and everything. But then, you know, it tries to present her as independent. And it's kind of like, who is she? Yeah. Who is this character? She's just kind of like a staple for everything. Yeah. Or I don't know. I kind of just spent a lot of time wondering about that. I mean,
since, you know, it's our first episode, there's not a better topic to discuss in chick flicks.
No.
So I mean, I having a girlfriend, you watched a lot of chick flicks.
A lot of chick flicks.
Yeah. And I recently watched both Devil Wears Prada and The Holiday, which I found both a little overrated as well. And
see, that's funny.
With this movie, though, I feel it has a certain edge. Like, it's not... But maybe that those were PG-13 and this is R. So, I mean, I don't know. And I Hugh Grant, I like. Not gonna lie.
Don't lie. I really like The Devil Wears Prada. I loved it.
Really?
I did. No, I really did. And that, I love you, that'll man. Actually, I love you, man. Yeah. That'll actually come back when we talk about I Love You, Man. But, yeah, no, I liked it. You know, it wasn't obviously, you know, I didn't think it was God's gift or something. I think some people love that movie too much, but I mean, isn't that the case with every movie, right? It was good. Meryl Streep was good. Anne Hathaway, I don't think, gets enough credit. Adrian Grenet, who, you know, is Vinny Chase on Entourage, showed range, any range, you know, which I, you know, like he plays a kind of a soulless, nice guy, but really just kind of a soulless actor on Entourage. So, you know, he doesn't ever really act. It just kind of seems like he's a blank slate, a pretty face. So watching a movie where he actually played a boyfriend who was conflicted because his girlfriend was becoming this clone of the fashion industry was kind of interesting. That actually made me really curious to see if he actually had any abilities at all. And to confirm that he does, in fact, have abilities, I urge anyone listening to rent The Adventures of Sebastian Cole, which was a movie that he was in, starred in. He played Sebastian Cole. I think it was in 2001, 2000, around there, directed by Todd Williams, who directed The Door on the Floor, which is one of my favorite movies. I love that movie with all my heart and soul. Jeff Bridges and Kim Basinger, based on a John Irving book.
I have to check it out.
Called the... I forget what the title of the book is, but...
But check out the movie regardless.
Check out the movie. Door on the Floor, Adventures of Sebastian Cole. Right. Adrian Grenet is not a bad actor. There's another movie we want to talk about, I think, that's not chick flick.
There's a certain movie that is an American staple that I have not seen. I've probably seen it referenced or mentioned countless times. But the film is of course, the 1986 Tony Scott.
Classic.
Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer starring, Anthony Edwards starring, Top Gun. So much like Bridget Jones' Diary, this film was bought by my girlfriend on our Orlando trip to watch. True. Yes,
great taste this girl has.
Yes,
well, so, good taste because I didn't really think.
So, Bridget Top Jones Gun. I've heard him. I've heard it talked about. I haven't really seen anything of it. I don't know how. I don't know how I haven't. And
I don't know how you have either.
Yeah. So we watched it. I have to say, it was a good comedy. And
oh, fuck you. No.
No. There's definitely I can see, you know, the classic lines and the certain love it's
and the homoeroticism.
Yes, no, that was a huge thing. I wasn't gonna talk about that later. But I mean the plane sequences are very well done.
Editing.
A couple of the angles Tony Scott uses is good. It's good. And the editing is definitely well done. Now, the rest of the film is, I don't know.
You're everybody's problem, Maverick.
Yeah, it's just, Dan, what did you think of the film?
I'm going to set you guys up. Jordan, when he was younger, his parents didn't let him watch a lot of, I don't know, gratuitous movies or whatever, a lot of PG-13 R movies.
Or The Simpsons, by the way.
Or The Simpsons, but I could watch Family Guy. Criminal.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, my parents didn't really care that much about that. So I saw a lot of these movies, and Jordan has seen most of them.
I wouldn't necessarily call Top Gun a gratuitous.
Well, no, I mean it's a movie.
I just missed it. It was one of those I just missed.
Okay, all right. Well, either or,
but
you missed it.
You're right.
I've seen it many times.
Yes.
Many, many times. It was just a movie that I just happened to see a lot of times. And I don't know. It's just, for one reason or another, it's one of those movies. I can't even explain why it's so universally accepted as this hit. Like, when you watch it, it's actually kind of surprising. Yeah. Like, the editing's great. Like, the editing's great during the flight scenes. I mean, I don't even know if there's been a movie that has shot fighter pilot sequences better. I mean, I don't really even... I mean, 20 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, Behind Enemy Lines? That was a joke. Yeah. Hey, it was okay. It was okay. You know, a good action movie. But I mean, yeah, I mean, really, just great editing. It did a lot with what it had.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And then, like, it's a great soundtrack. You know, the Kenny Loggins really worked. Yeah. And it was very 80s movie. And maybe that's why it's nostalgic for a lot of people, like, because it's just ham-fisted.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what I think is so funny about it. Maybe that's why it's so good. I mean, there's so many parts of that movie which are just...
The volleyball sequence.
Ridiculous. I mean, yeah, the volleyball sequence is...
When the one character flexes, you know?
His name was Slider.
Slider, yes. It was my first time watching.
Or as I call him, Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my nickname for him, because that shot is priceless.
Yes, yes.
No, I mean, there's a lot of homoeroticism. It's very American Psycho, except not a satire. It's actually real. Yep. You know, like when Val Kilmer bites, presses his teeth together in front of Tom Cruise. I was expecting them to start making out, and I've seen that movie 15 times, and I know they don't, but it's still there, that idea that they will. Yeah. But at the same time, when Goose dies, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, shame on you.
I
think Jordan was the only person who's never seen it. When Goose dies, though, seriously, it's actually effective, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was watching this movie. I swear to God, I was watching this movie with you.
Yeah.
For the 15th time. I think it's like the 15th time. Yeah. Like, I'm talking straight through 15th time. And it still is effective, and I don't know why. Yeah. It's what I like to call the Forrest Gump theory. Because, and I'm going to say this, and I'll probably get a lot of flack for this, Forrest Gump is kind of a ridiculous movie. I don't really know why it's so well-loved. I mean, I get it. I love it too. But it's one of those movies where if you actually break it down cinematically or whatever, critically... It's really not a great movie. I mean, there's a lot of holes in it. It's very kind of shallow, surface level. It's really gimmicky. But it's an incredible film. It hits you on so many different levels, and I don't get it. I don't get why that is. I think it's just, like, you know, like, they call it the Forrest Gump theory, the Titanic theory. These are movies that really don't go to any great depths. But I think it's really, at the end of the day, the classic Hollywood theory. Yeah, why do people love Gone with the Wind? You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, that there wasn't anything too deep there.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it now, it's really a pretty shallow piece of work. I mean,
well, from the time it came out.
I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, 70 years ago, it was revolutionary in every way. But now it's really kind of just blah. But it's still very effective, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is, per se.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any ideas? Like, why is a movie like Top Gun? Why is a movie like Forrest Gump? A movie like Titanic.
I mean, in all those films, there's just memorable scenes that, like, is that, iconic. I mean, yeah, like,
just iconic scenes. Yeah, iconic lines.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, you could say the same for Usual Suspects. I feel like is always a good example. That movie stays with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that movie. Yeah, I will always love that movie. Yeah. But like I said, if you break it down critically, there's a lot of parts of it you can laugh at. You know, when he drops the cup of coffee and it's like, you know, twirling. But I mean, these movies last. Why is that? You know, why do those movies last? In a movie like Australia, and we've talked about this many times, Baz Luhrmann's Australia. I loved it. I love that movie. It was number 5 on my top 20 of the year, which you can access on our website. Like, it was my number 5, and I stand by that. I loved that movie. Yeah. But people hated that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Very few just people
dismissed immediately when it came out.
Like, totally dismissed. Yeah. It cost $150 million, and it made 50 in this country. I mean, it actually
doing better
worldwide. It made like 200 altogether. Yeah. Worldwide, it made like 150.
Yeah, so, but for a movie that was supposed to be an Oscar contender at the beginning of the year,
I mean, it was on a lot of Oscar lists in the beginning of the year, and I loved Hugh Jackman. Yeah. I love Nicole Kidman, and I hate her.
Yeah.
I literally hate her.
No,
she was incredible.
Yeah.
I thought. And I didn't get it. You know, I didn't get why that movie will be forgotten forever.
Yeah.
But you know, a Forrest Gump will be. Or A Curious Case of Benjamin Button, another good example. That movie really didn't gain a lot of momentum. It got 13 Oscar nominations, whatever. But it really didn't make too much money.
Yeah.
It didn't make its budget domestically.
And it didn't get the Oscars.
It didn't get really any of the Oscars I was hoping for. you know, it kind of lost a lot of gas at the end there. So why does that movie, which is in a lot of ways kind of a reversed carbon copy of Forrest Gump, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of jokes about it, but written by the same guy, Eric Roth. And why does that movie kind of get thrown away and Forrest Gump gets put on this pedestal? You know, and I'm with all you people. Like, I agree with you. Forrest Gump, I'll always remember more than... I love Benjamin Button, but...
I mean, people think... I mean, and I tend to agree. It is a slow movie. It is kind of meddling.
Is that... You think that's why maybe Forrest Gump was more fast moving?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a good point.
Yeah, and it just... It spent a lot of time just, you know...
Kind of lingering.
These characters that weren't as intent, like as interesting as Tom Hanks, you know, and...
I mean, it could come down to the fact that Tom Hanks is a much better actor than Brad Pitt. I mean, at the end of the day.
No.
That's, I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah. So, Top Gun, Bridget Jones' Diary. Would you say check them out?
Oh, check them both out. Yeah. No,
I'm sure you've checked out quote unquote
classics in their own right. I'm sure most listening have seen them or heard of them, at least. Like I said, Bridget Jones, I'd give a solid B. Mm. I don't think it distinguishes itself. As much from other romantic comedies as people say it does, but it's very still a solid romantic comedy. And Top Gun is just the balls. I mean, literally the balls because it's so homoerotic.
It is, and
you know,
I mean, I didn't love it. I didn't. It's not a movie I'm gonna really necessarily watch.
Well, I did love it because I'm an American. Jordan clearly is not. All right, so let's move on before we get unpatriotic here.
Yeah, no. All right, so you want to do Kill Shot?
Let's do it. All right, so here we go. You want to take it away?
Yeah. Kill Shot. Oh. This film was directed by John Madden.
There's got to be a reason I'm drinking.
Who directed Shakespeare? Well, it is St. Patty's Day.
St. Patty's Day.
Anyways, Kill Shot, directed by John Madden, who has directed Shakespeare in Love, Proof, and
Ethan Frome too, which underrated.
Yeah.
Adaptation of an incredible novel starring Liam Neeson.
This movie, Kill Shot, was released in theaters for possibly the shortest release in history.
It was released in five screens.
Got kind of thrown away. The Weinstein Company kind of realized what it had, and
well, the Weinstein Company was doing that with a lot of movies, though.
That's true. So this movie stars Mickey Rourke, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Diane Lane, Thomas Jane,
The Punisher.
Yep, The Punisher. No, Rosario Dawson, and So, the film is getting a DVD release pretty soon.
What do you think about it, Jordan?
Sell the movie, yeah.
Give me your 5 cents. I want to hear your 5 cents.
So, starts out with a flashback scene of Mickey Rourke and his brothers pulling off a robbery. And, you know, it's kind of cheesy. You know, I didn't expect much to start out with the movie, but... the scene, you know, I mean, it has some tight editing and, you know, fast pace, and then the scene ends and brought back to present time, and and you introduce the rest of the characters in a montage sequence of sorts in the intro, and kind of all ridiculous. Would you say, Dan? I mean,
it starts kind of promising. I mean.
Do you want to give a little plot outline first?
Yeah, let me. All right. Well, so here's kind of the way it goes down. Like Jordan said, we're introduced to Mickey Rourke's character first. Mickey Rourke, as you know, he's coming off a Oscar nomination and should have won.
Yes.
For The Wrestler.
Yes.
His comeback movie, an incredible performance. So I think this was filmed before that. Forgotten film. But anyway, okay, so. Mickey Rourke is a hitman in this movie. The first scene we're introduced to him and his two brothers. The hit doesn't really go that well. Okay. Then we're introduced to Thomas Jane and Diane Lane. They are a couple, a married couple who are on hard times. And through a series of coincidental events, they kind of all converge. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is kind of just this hick con man who's really stupid. Rosario Dawson is his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. The thing about this movie, which is so, it was a bad movie, let's just say that, right?
Yeah.
Now it was a bad movie. That's what we're getting at. It was horrible. it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And what's
with that said, there was a few elements of the film.
I mean, it was directed by John Madden.
Yeah.
You know, who, say what you will about Shakespeare in Love winning Best Picture, ridiculous over Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. It's a great movie, one of the best romantic comedies ever made. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just a fun movie. Proof, with Gwyneth Paltrow and Anthony Hopkins and Jake Gyllenhaal, is totally underappreciated. Incredibly written, you know, simply directed, greatly acted. I mean, John Madden is clearly good at something. Clearly. Yeah. Like I said, Ethan Frome, much of the same. Liam Neeson, incredible. Joan Allen, see it.
Yeah.
Came out in the early 90s. But what I'm saying is, Killshot has none of this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a mess. It's a total mess. And it starts kind of promisingly. You think, you know, it's a pretty good sequence with the brothers, Mickey Rourke and his two brothers who are all hitmen in the beginning. It's kind of provocative, whatever. Could have been better, but
yeah.
It's okay. And then Thomas Jane is the definition of an average actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in this. And one. Diane Lane is Diane fucking Lane, you know? Yeah. I mean, she's good. I like Diane Lane.
Yeah. She's had a couple rough years though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't make Untraceable and Jumper without thinking, what the hell am I doing? But, yeah.
That's true. I mean, I have to say, like, do you think it's a reason of the production problems? This movie was originally completed in 2006, January 2006, and since then it's gone over a bunch of reshoots. And it was originally supposed to come out in 2002 with Tony Scott directing, Robert De Niro starring, and Quentin Tarantino playing the Richie Nix character.
Wow.
Yeah. So I wonder if it's just...
We're getting this from IMDb, by the way.
Source of IMDb trivia page.
Just to copyright that.
Yeah.
I
have a feeling, though, I mean, the story itself is not one that's very...
Well, hang on. It was written... This is based on source material written by Elmar Leonard. And in case you don't know who that is, this guy is the definition of any good crime film you've seen in the last 10 years.
Out of sight.
Probably based on something he wrote. Out of Sight, which I would argue is the best heist movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that. And I've seen The Sting. Mm-hmm. I have seen Heist. I've seen those movies. And I would argue that movie is better than all of them.
Mm. I mean, he did do Be Cool.
That was a bad one. But Get Shorty, though.
He did the short story that 310 to Yuma was.
Oh, really? Elmer Leonard did that?
Yeah.
I mean, and Get Shorty is one of the best films of the 90s,
yeah.
Straight off.
Yeah.
I mean, Get Shorty is like if you took The Player, which is one of the best satires ever made, if you took The Player and you mixed it with Pulp Fiction, you get Shorty. I mean, that is a combination that is, I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I'm not even exaggerating. That movie's great. I mean, one of the only good movies John Travolta's ever made.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
All right, well, back to Killshot.
No, but I mean Killshot.
It just gets more ridiculous and
it just feels.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke's nickname is Blackbird in the film.
Blackbird.
And you're gonna hear that.
He's Native American.
Yeah.
BTW.
Oh, and his accent. Oh my God, he tries so hard with the accent, and it just.
I mean, we're talking about, by the way, Mickey Rourke. Mickey fucking Rourke. This guy is no joke. He's the definition of method actor.
Yeah.
I mean, see Diner.
Yeah.
See Pope on Greenwich Village. Yeah. Pope of Greenwich Village. Me and Jordan were watching actually last week on the road trip. I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, early '80s. If someone comes up to you and says, who's the best actor in the business? The answer is Mickey Rourke.
Yeah,
like, no joke. And he's back with The Wrestler, which is, I mean, the best thing he's ever done.
I mean, Killshot is just... This was made 2 years before The Wrestler. So
no, I mean, okay. I mean, it feels like a money job.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally.
I mean, Diane Lane, I mean, let's get that out of the way, is horrendous in this thing.
I mean, no spoilers. There's a scene towards the end when Mickey Rourke is kind of fed up with... Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, and he's just sitting at the table shaking his head. Then Dan and I were joking around that, you know, he actually didn't think the movie was shooting, and he was just wondering why the hell he was here and making this.
It's like, I hope Darren Aronofsky calls me because I need some work right now.
It's just, I mean, okay, there's a scene in the middle, minor spoilers, where Mickey Rourke and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's characters, they come to... a real estate firm that Thomas Jane's wife works at, and Thomas Jane was going to talk to
The boss.
Her boss, yeah. And he wasn't there, and he gets mistaken for the boss, and Mickey Rourke and Joseph Gordon-Levitt come to make him pay up on an offer they
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was blackmailing the
blackmailing
boss.
the boss, yeah. And there's an action scene that follows that. I mean, it kept my attention. It was well, not well shot, but
Well, that was the one thing. I mean, what I say to you during the movie. I mean, it the one the probably the worst, the biggest sin of the movie
yeah.
is that it's kind of apparent that John Madden, who's a dramatic actor, I mean, a dramatic director,
Director, yeah.
clearly doesn't know how to direct action.
Yeah. I have to agree. But I mean, the film is just not good. I mean, there's so many other alternatives, like if you want to watch.
I mean, if you want to watch a good hitman movie, I mean,
even watch another Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, like The Lookout.
The Lookout is so good.
Yeah, very
written.
Appreciated.
Written by the guy who wrote Out of Sight, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Scott Frank, right? Didn't he write Out of Sight? Yeah, I think he did. I'm almost positive. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Jordan's going to check that, but I'm pretty positive he did. That was his directorial debut, which was, you know, the Lookout, what we said. That was his Scott Frank's directorial debut, and it's a great little crime movie, kind of in the vein of an Elmore Leonard book. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah, the Marley and Me script. Look at that. Wow.
Oh, did you?
Anyway, yeah.
IMDb said it's right, so it has to be right. Speaking of The Lookout, I'm just going to go off on a little tangent.
Yes.
Here.
Well, I'd rather talk about The Lookout than Killshot, so.
Yeah, well, we're done with Killshot. I would give it a D. A D plus, just because, like Jordan said.
I have to agree with you.
There's some B movie quality to it, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's plenty of other B movies to see other than that, so feel free to do that instead.
Yeah.
Okay, so just jumping on to The Lookout, just quickly playing a little 6 degrees of separation. The bad guy in The Lookout, and an incredible bad guy at that, is Matthew Good.
Yes.
And he's great in that movie. Matthew Good, in case you're wondering, is the actor who plays Ozymandias in Watchmen, which came out.
Watchmen. I haven't heard of that
film. I haven't heard of this movie at all. Watchmen. What is this
no
film?
No one's talking about it.
It's just a little indie.
Yeah.
Little indie film that just got released.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, before we review I Love You Man, do you want to talk about Watchmen?
Well, let me get the final word. I mean, obviously this is a subject that's totally worn out.
Yeah.
I don't want to really I'm really tired of it, to be honest, but I read the graphic novel. I'm one of those recently. I saw the movie, and when I saw the movie, I gave it on Twitter. I gave it a 7 out of 10, kind of initial.
And I wrote a review
for the website,
8.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed it, but Dan has another opinion.
Yeah, I do. Well, okay, so Jordan has had the luxury of seeing it twice. So he said after he saw it the second time, he liked it more.
Yeah, all the problems I had. I mean, most of the problems went away.
Right.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it twice, so I'll get that out of the way. But I've had also around 10 days to think over my viewing of it, midnight screening. And I like it less. I'll say that. I like it less. But what's worse is I kind of like the graphic novel less. Not obviously not the artwork. Dave Gibbons' artwork is incredible. But the Alan Moore writing, it's not cinematic. It's not cinematic. It's kind of heavy-handed. And for a graphic novel, that's fine. I mean, you know, if you look at something like The Long Halloween or The Killing Joke, or I'm reading Preacher right now, actually, they're heavy-handed. I mean, it's on the page, kind of like, you know, maybe a classic novel, because they're not getting adapted. They're not meant to be adapted into film, you know, and that's the point. You know, when you write a screenplay, people are going to be saying, they're going to be speaking your words, articulating your words, and if they can't make it believable, then it's not going to sound good. Look at Harrison Ford's narration in Blade Runner. It's not good because Harrison Ford doesn't have an expressive voice that kind of maybe would make the words mean more. So, I mean, that's just an example of what I'm talking about. And I feel like that was Watchmen's biggest problem. You hear lines in that movie and they come off as silly. When they're not, when you're reading it, because it's in your mind and you make your own associations, and that's my biggest problem with it. That and the soundtrack, which I thought was kind of ridiculous in some points.
Well,
but the reason I brought it up in the first place was I just want to get my I want to say that I loved Matthew Good in it. I thought that Ozymandias, who's been getting a lot of flack, and you know, people hate the Germanic.
Not attention.
Total lack of attention. Yeah. Total, people hating on the Germanic accent and whatever. I loved him. I thought that was exactly what I thought Ozymandias would be like. I loved kind of the way he played it as an Aryan specimen, like Hitler's perfect human kind of a thing. So, if Matthew Good, if you're listening, way to go. Keep on doing what you do. I loved you in Match Point. Loved you in Lookout. Keep it up. Very good. All right. And that is all I'm going to say about The Watchmen.
That won't be the last discussion, but God, hopefully it will be the last discussion on this podcast. Okay. So, we saw I Love You, Man about 2 hours ago. Well, we got out of it about 2 hours ago. This is the 2009 comedy directed by John Hamburg.
Who directed Along Came Polly.
Yeah, previously of
Along Came Polly. Underrated comedy.
Yep, and writer of such comedies as Zoolander and Meet the Parents, both of some of my favorite comedies. So, I Love You, Man stars Paul Rudd, Rashida Jones, and Jason Segel. And co-stars John Favreau, Jamie Presley, and a whole slew of characters that I'm
literally
sure.
Any funny person that you've seen that you know hasn't been in an Adam Sandler movie is in this movie.
Yeah, so pretty much the plot. If you haven't seen the trailers or anything about it, Paul Rudd, he plays Peter Klavan. He's getting engaged to Rashida Jones,
arguably character. The most beautiful woman in the world.
Yeah, she really is beautiful in this movie, but he. In the beginning of the film, you kind of learn that he really doesn't have any friends. And,
guy friends,
yeah. Well, I mean, girlfriends do. I mean, there's not.
No, he does. No, he's one of these guys who gets along with girls.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So his wife, he overhears a conversation his wife has with
the fiancé.
Yes, I'm sorry, fiancé. Fiancé. His fiancé has with a bunch of her girlfriends saying how, she doesn't really know if Peter is going to have a best man for his wedding. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, I know. One of the scariest parts of...
conflict.
Conflict, yes. Yeah. So Peter goes on a search...
for a best man.
For best man. And...
Who does he find, Jordan?
He finds a lot of interesting characters.
Yeah. Nice little montage of dinners and what have you.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially... Right, I mean, what did you think of the movie? First off, what did you think of the movie?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I would classify it more of a romantic comedy than pure comedy, and definitely a great movie to see. You know, with a significant other. It doesn't get to the level of raunchiness as a lot of R-rated comedies do.
It's not an Apatow comedy.
Yeah, no, it's not an Apatow comedy.
I mean, that's kind of a big thing that I feel like maybe people are confusing with.
Yeah,
it's not. I mean, it's an R. comedy.
Yeah. There's a few scenes that I made, but the gross out parts.
I mean, it's language.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not. I mean, there's really not. There's no nudity in it, actually, right? No, there's no nudity at all in it. So I mean, it's really. They talk about some real stuff. Actually, it's kind of like it's a chick flick for guys. It's a guy flick.
A bromance.
I mean, it is a bromance.
I mean, it's not strictly bromance. The relationships with Paul Rudd and Rashida Jones' characters
Rashida Jones, I feel like really kind of shows a lot of her ability in this movie, though. Really,
yeah.
I mean, she's funny like in a natural way
because
she gets no help from the screenplay. She gets no lines. But she is still
no
punchlines. Very funny, kind of like in the vein of Elizabeth Banks.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Who I mean is unabashedly beautiful in the most natural of ways,
and a great
but
actress.
Also funny as shit. You know what I mean? Funny as shit. And I mean Rashida Jones, who, in case you don't know who that is, she played Karen on The Office, who was like the in between that Jim was with, but before Pam, and she's actually the daughter of Quincy Jones, who's one of Hollywood's greatest composers. He did like Shaft and Heat of the Night, some really great work. So she, aside from being just astonishingly gorgeous, is funny. I mean, she's funny. She curses. She's natural. She's a girl that I would know, that you would know, that we would know. You know what I mean? But I mean, getting back to Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, who ends up becoming that's no spoiler. Obviously, the trailers show that's what happens.
Yeah.
He becomes the, potential best man.
Yeah.
It's just a natural there's not really a lot of punchlines in it, right?
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's like with, I mean, it's not like an Apatow comedy, but with, it's more about, you know, the little things, you know, the little
you know, parts of the movie. Social observations.
Yeah. In the film, Paul Rudd's very awkward. I mean, he hasn't had a best friend
so awkward.
Ever. And there's a scene in the beginning where he leaves a voicemail on, his name is,
Sidney Fife.
Yeah, sorry, Sidney Fife. Paul Rudd leaves a voicemail on Sidney Fife.
That's Jason Segel.
Yeah, Jason Segel's character, and it's just hilarious to watch him try to weave his way through a coherent message, and he just doesn't get anywhere close. And it just continues throughout the film. He tries to give names.
Yeah, and that message, by the way, was kind of an ironic shout out to Swingers.
Yeah,
and Jon Favreau.
Yeah,
who I mean, is in I Love You, Man, was the person who delivered the horribly, horribly embarrassing messages to Heather Graham's character in Swingers.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of funny that he was in both movies.
And Paul Rudd in this film is just like, just hilarious to watch, and you feel for his character. And
I would argue Paul Rudd is one of the most naturally funny guys in the world. I mean, there's nothing you can really do that's not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of...
No, definitely. What did you think of the film, though?
Oh, no, I liked it. I mean, clearly, I enjoyed it. It wasn't Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
I love Forgetting Sarah Marshall, though. I mean, that was on my top 20.
Yeah,
kind of high up, actually. I thought it was the funniest movie last year, and last year was a incredible year for comedies.
Yeah.
So I think it was one of the funniest movies of the last, you know, 5 years. And we're kind of in a golden age of comedies, I would argue. When Will Ferrell is like the third funniest person in the world or in America or whatever, I mean, that's saying something, you know? So, I mean, I think Paul Rudd continues to show how he's so funny. I mean, just in anything he does. In this movie, like I said, it's not Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's not Tropic Thunder. I love Tropic Thunder. It's not even Pineapple Express.
No,
which was great.
And I'm glad. I mean, I'm glad it's not like those.
It's its own movie. It's a lot nicer than those movies.
Yeah.
I feel like the payoff in this one. I was actually thinking about this not too long ago. It's kind of, when you think about it, it's kind of a risky movie. I don't want to give away anything, you know, it's coming out on Friday, so I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but in a way, it's not really afraid to kind of avoid some laughs in order to make you wait for a payoff, in the sense that you're going to feel maybe better about the characters or whatever, and that's kind of a rare thing. Like, it's not an immediate satisfaction, but at the end of it, I found myself really kind of just happy. You know what I mean? Really like a weight was lifted off my shoulders kind of a thing, which is more kind of succinct with a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Like we were saying, not necessarily a comedy, just straightforward. So, I mean, somewhere between Forgetting Sarah Marshall and... what's another good... Forgetting Sarah Marshall and... Wedding Crashers? You know what I mean? Kind of like, you know, Wedding Crashers is I would argue the first half of it is just a straight comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Forgetting Sarah Marshall is like kind of a constant, dirty romantic comedy.
Yeah.
I Love You, Man is less funny than both, but just as comforting as either of them.
I mean, it has different qualities too, which definitely... You know,
really organic.
Around. Yeah.
You know, Jason Segel and Paul Rudd clearly like each other in real life.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. You can definitely tell. Yeah. There's nothing that felt forced or anything. I mean... Everything was natural. Just
very natural.
Yeah. What did you think of some of the supporting characters, like Andy Samberg,
love
of SNL fame, plays Paul Rudd's gay brother.
I'm on a boat.
Yeah.
And I'm an Andy Samberg fan. I'm gonna say that I'm an Andy Samberg fan.
Even after Hot Rod? No.
Even
I enjoyed Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. Say what you will.
Cool beans. Okay. Anyways, back right, to sorry. I Love You, Man.
Hot Rod is great. Andy Samberg in I Love You, Man is funny. He's funny. He's Paul Rudd's gay younger brother.
Mm-hmm. Best friends to J.K. Simmons, who plays Paul Rudd's father.
Yeah, and Andy Samberg's father.
Yeah,
he's funny. Andy Samberg's a funny guy.
Yeah.
And he's getting funnier. You know, SNL's getting funnier. He's getting funnier.
Yeah.
He's kind of becoming the, you know, whatever, the Will Ferrell, the Yeah. Phil Hartman.
I don't think he's going to reach, you know.
Well, no. I mean, I don't know appeal, that he... But who knows, actually? Who knows, though? You know, I mean, it took a while for Will Ferrell. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying he will become the next, you know, Bill Murray or Chevy Chase or, you know, all the long line of... But, I mean, it's there. I mean, Andy Samberg's funny. This is a new kind of comedy, awkward, stupid, but really kind of smart at the same time comedy that's going on. He's funny. Who else? We got Jon Favreau.
Yeah, I was going to say Jon Favreau. He plays a disgruntled husband of one of Rashida Jones' friends, played by Jamie Presley. And in every scene of the movie, he quite doesn't want to be there, except, I mean, obviously, there's a scene. You might have seen it if you watched any of the clips from the film online, but there's a scene where he plays poker, and he needs his wife out of the house, and Paul Rudd gets invited one of those nights, and the results are hilarious.
They're projected on the screen.
Literally, yeah.
Literally. Jon Favreau, I thought I liked him. He was a little bit too much of an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have a character in a light romantic comedy, and that's what this is in a lot of ways, if you're going to have a character who's just a complete douche, it has to be worth it in terms of laughs. And I, in some respects, I don't think it was necessarily. But by the end of the movie, I mean, he's kind of just another character. The characters kind of grow on you. I'll take it. You know, that's kind of the way I look at it. I mean, he was. I would argue he was like one of the weakest links of the film. But Karen Rashida Jones, who her name's Zoe in this film.
Yeah, Zoe.
Her other best friend, who's not Jamie Presley. What's her name? You have it up there?
She plays Haley in the film.
Her name's Haley.
Sarah Burns.
Who, she's kind of... what else has she been in?
She was in one episode of Flight of the Conchords. She played Summer. I don't even really remember in that. I mean,
she's funny.
Not much. No, she was funny.
I mean, I see her kind of staying around, sticking around.
Yeah.
I mean, I see her as a... Supporting, you know. Like a Kristen Wiig... You know, who's an SNL member.
Yeah.
I see her, that you know, that's the kind of person she'll play. You know, like a funny supporting cast member.
Yeah.
You know, like a Joan Cusack, you know, if you will.
Just going to another topic of the film.
Go ahead.
What do you think of the music in the film? I thought it was funny. On Twitter, someone mentioned that the upcoming Greg Motala film, Adventureland, uses Rush as well.
Same really?
Song. Yeah, same song and everything. So, I mean, both these comedies are coming out with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was Rush is like a big part of this film.
Yeah, yeah, huge part.
And if you don't know who Rush is, shame on you.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for listening.
I mean,
and they're a band. I mean, they're still around.
Yeah, definitely.
Not quite a jam band, I mean, like an experimental.
Yeah.
Rock
no, but I like how it was
good.
Incorporated in the story. Yeah. They're actually there's a scene where they actually go to a Rush concert and I mean, I enjoyed seeing that.
It was good. I mean, movies have been doing that more lately. I feel like,
and the soundtrack for this film also is pretty good.
A lot of Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, a lot of two Vampire Weekend songs, Flaming Lips.
Flaming Lips.
Yeah, it was a good soundtrack. I mean, the music fit well. It wasn't really overbearing. I don't know.
No, I mean, you know, it's trying to... I feel like the music kind of made it apparent that this film was trying to kind of...
keep it in the vein, you know, light.
But, I mean, acquiesce to a younger demographic. You know, I mean, how many people over 25 know who Vampire Weekend is?
Step Brothers. They're in Step Brothers opening.
Amen. Very true. Very true. That's right. No, I mean... But, I mean, it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
You know, I mean, too much Vampire Weekend is kind of risky. Yeah. But in this case, when you're walking on Venice Beach or whatever, it works. It definitely works.
Yeah.
I mean, so what would you scale 1 to 10? What do you give it?
8.
8?
I'd say 8. A little.
Okay.
7 to 8.
Yeah, I was going to say 7, 7, 8. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, 8's close to 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's... So I would say 7.5.
Yeah, I have to agree.
But I mean, good. I mean, worth
definitely worth
the $8 to $10 you'll spend if you go to the cinema.
Yeah, the theater.
The theater.
No, definitely worth it. I mean, go with friends, enjoy it. It's It's definitely a fun time.
Go with a girlfriend, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean,
boyfriend if you're a girl.
Or boyfriend. Or a guy.
Or a guy. If you're a guy listening
to this. Hey, this movie promotes that.
Yeah.
In a way.
In a way.
That's, I think, the beauty of this movie. You might be hesitant to take someone to see Forgetting Sarah Marshall because it's kind of like risque, whatever.
Yeah. No, yeah.
But this movie, you know, you're not really, I mean, you know, like I said, they talk about a lot of shit, but there's not really a lot of nudity or anything. It's it's a good bet.
Yeah.
It's a good bet. And so 7.5, kind of all around the film stage, I would argue, in general. But speaking of good date movies, coming out this weekend, kind of moving on from the I Love You Man review.
Yes.
Duplicity.
Yes, Duplicity hits theaters.
Let's just talk about this for a minute. Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Oh, man.
We both haven't seen it.
I'm a massive Clive Owen fanboy.
Clearly.
And he is my man crush, if I can say that without...
Say it. Yeah, say it, brother.
Okay, I can say it. We saw The International. I liked it a little bit more than Dan did. A lot more. Wow. Okay, a lot more. And he was good in that. I mean, there's nothing... I mean, if he's on screen, I'm going to enjoy it. Closer, Children of Men, liked all of them, shoot 'em up. Duplicity comes out, directed by Tony Gilroy, writer and director of Michael Clayton, 2007 film with George Clooney, which was nominated for Best Picture. Duplicity sounds, it looks fun, it looks, you know, enjoyable. I read some early reviews where they said that, one review actually said it puts the Ocean's franchise to shame, which I'll have to check out. Yeah, and it's an adult, adult.
That same review said that it was better than Michael Clayton.
Yeah,
true. Now, I loved Michael Clayton. Loved that movie.
Yeah.
So that was, I felt very insane. Who knows?
No, I think it's going to be a fun movie. I mean, it's adult theme. It's definitely, I heard it's very, fast paced. There's a lot to follow, but it's worth it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. We on this road trip we stopped by a lot of places, and we actually stopped by my grandmother's house down in South Carolina, and we watched Arsenic and Old Lace, which is actually a Frank Capra movie that came out. When did it come out? Do you know?
1944.
Thank you, Jordan. And Frank Capra, he's the guy who directed It's a Wonderful Life, It Happened One Night, great movie. Yeah, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, probably my favorite of his, Mr. Smith. I haven't seen Mr. Deeds Goes to Washington. Mr. Deeds
Goes to Town, as I'm saying.
Oh yeah, that was the original is Mr. Deeds Goes to Town with Gary Cooper.
Yeah.
The remake, if you can call it that, was Mr. Deeds.
Yeah.
Sorry, Adam Sandler. Not horrible, but not good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Frank Capra directed this Arsenic and Old Lace. It was a play. Funny movie. Funny fucking movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just kind of like, that's the way it is with Frank Capra. Like, the movies are still funny.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Good. It's kind of amazing. Yeah. But anyway, what I was saying is Duplicity seems like a movie that Cary Grant would have been in.
Oh, yeah.
Had this been the 1950s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... And Clive Owen, I feel like there's no one better, and I know you agree, Jordan.
I agree.
Yeah, I know you agree. there's no one better than Clive Owen to kind of take that position.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see
the chemistry between him and Julia Roberts because.
Oh yeah, Julia Roberts.
Because I don't know how I feel about her,
Loved Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, she was good in Closer. I mean, they were in Closer together.
She has good performances. It's just, and I mean, great performances. But
there is a scene in Closer. Now, Closer, directed by Mike Nichols, kind of a disappointment. Based on a play, I feel like they didn't stray far enough away from the play in general.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a scene in Closer, which is pretty much a fight between Clive Owen and Julia Roberts, who played a couple, that is very intense, like brutal, brutal. It's just about their affairs, and they're talking about, how Julia Roberts swallowed, cum from Jude Law. It's intense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's intense. And in that scene alone, Julia Roberts was mesmerizing. Unfortunately, it's a two-hour movie, and Julia Roberts wasn't really great for the other, hour and 45 minutes.
I agree.
But Clive Owen is still Clive Owen. Tony Gilroy is still Tony Gilroy. And don't forget, Paul Giamatti and Tom Wilkinson are both in this movie.
Yes. And
those
trailer,
guys.
We saw some footage in the new trailer. It seems they're going to duke it out. If you've seen it.
Yeah.
Fight. So I'm excited to see it. Great cast. So, yeah. So Duplicity comes out this weekend. I Love You Man comes out this weekend. And also, Knowing comes out this weekend.
Directed by Alex Proyas.
You can see, check out a review over at thefilmstage.com. One of our other staff writers, Jack Gearwax, was able to see a preview screening and reviewed it. And he enjoyed it.
Give it an 8 out of 10?
Give it an 8 out of 10. He had some qualms with the CGI. And I guess Rose Byrne is in the film, and she is a little bit underdeveloped, it said. But it seems like it's going to be a good, you know, mindless kind of film.
Better than the number 20. Better than the number 23.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I of course, Dark City, great movie. I don't think you can argue that.
No.
And iRobot, I enjoyed.
I liked it. So. Very good.
So yeah, those are the films coming out this weekend.
And also The Crow. Don't forget The Crow.
Yeah,
that was his first movie.
The Crow, that's right. All right, so those are the films. I would definitely check out I Love You Man if you have the chance. Yeah. And I'm definitely going to be checking out Duplicity as well.
Without a doubt.
So yeah, that wraps up our first podcast.
Any closing thoughts there, Jordan?
No, I mean, you can always follow us at thefilmstage.com. You can subscribe to our RSS feed. And you can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/DJMecca.
Please post any thoughts you had about the podcast. We're hoping to make this, you know, a weekly or biweekly thing, depending on our workload and everything. But we had fun doing it. And
when will this podcast be up?
You should probably be listening to this in the next 2 days, so probably by Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday. Wednesday. Look for it on the website, thefilmstage.com. And thanks for listening.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
Have a good night.